Welcome to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast, featuring advice and interviews about athlete branding. Learn how marketing, public relations, and broadcasting can grow your brand. We also have special episodes to talk about recent news, events, and anything in the world of sports. The podcast is sponsored by Pliable, a versatile marketing, PR, and broadcasting company that identifies opportunities and creates tailored content for its clients. Now it's time to roll. Here's your host, Greg Glenn.
Thanks and welcome to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast, where we're always ready to roll. If you're looking for insights and advice on athlete branding, you're in the right place. In this episode, we're going to be talking about advice for college athletes and life after sports. And today's guest is Colin Cook. I know Colin from our time together as students at Quinnipiac University, and it's a small world. Colin actually went to Lawrence Academy with a good childhood friend of mine in Steve Wood. The number of floor hockey games that I played against Woody in my basement are too many to count. Colin and I recently reconnected because of our careers, and I'm so excited to have him share his story with you today. He is a self-described cybersecurity geek, triathlon coach, wellness center owner, triathlon club president, podcaster, competitive age group Ironman triathlete, and most importantly, a dad. Colin, welcome to the podcast.
Great to be here, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. As we come into this episode, I was really excited to talk with you because you hit on a lot of things in our conversation before this podcast that a lot of athletes go through, especially coming out of college. And, you know, now with name, image, and likeness, everyone's looking to try and benefit and try and figure out who they are and what their story is. And, you know, years ago, there were athletes that would come out of college and, you know, they'd be looking for their career, where to start, what to do. And when the athletic side of things didn't play out to go pro or maybe go overseas, that's a difficult transition. So I wanted to start with your time at Quinnipiac as an athlete. You were a backup, really goalie, but talk to me about your experience as an athlete there and how you looked at your time at Quinnipiac.
Sure. So yeah, it was a great experience, you know, despite being a third string goalie. So, you know, goalie certainly is tough, right? You got to kind of find the right circumstances and, you know, but being behind two goalies that were clearly better than me and that I recognized, you know, made it a little bit easier to accept than somebody that maybe felt like they should be getting more time, you know. And, you know, I'll say both of those goaltenders went on to play, you know, in the AHL and, yeah, and you know, played some pro. So it justified it a little bit more, but, you know, goalies were certainly have our uniqueness, but you know, I got really got along with everybody on the team, but especially those two guys, and they helped me get better, and I think I helped them get better. And you know, I recognized my role for most of my time at Quinnipiac, but it was a lot of fun. And you know, well, we'll talk about some other things that happened there, and you know, with it potentially where I kind of started heading the wrong direction, but at the same time, you know, it was amazing time in my life that, you know, I'm very proud of.
You know, I thought it was interesting in looking back at this, Colin, one game, 4 minutes and 50 seconds was your Quinnipiac career. And I thought to myself, man, Colin put in all this time. I know the time you guys put in the weight room. I know all the time, the effort, the practices, the travel, the academics. And I thought to myself, that's even more impressive in a way, in some ways than some others that, you know, they have the opportunity to play and maybe they don't maximize their career, or their potential. But for you to do that, I thought was really impressive. By the way, for those of you scoring, he did have a perfect goals against average and save percentage. So that goes to your credit. So talk to me a little bit, Colin, like you mentioned here, what happened at Quinnipiac that kind of was different for you?
Well, so, I mean, again, you know, expectations were reasonable, I think, there, you know. So knowing I was heading into a situation with two very, very good goalies, and, you know, Coach Pecknault was very upfront with me about that. So, you know, I realized what I was going into. You know, I guess to kind of take a quick step back on that, you know, I certainly had the opportunity, could have played Division III somewhere and things like that. But, you know, obviously great to have had an opportunity to experience Division I college hockey. And, but, you know, as a third string goalie, you know, college times, you know, you, I certainly, like to have my fun, and, I think had a little too much fun, with, you know, the opportunities I had by knowing that I wasn't going to be playing.
Right. I was going to say, cause that changes things a little bit, for sure. And especially kind of as a goalie, like you said, third string, you kind of were able to relax a little bit more than most, and know that you might not be called on the next day, even if somebody went down, you know, there was at least a guy in front of you. So tell me how that kind of went, because that made you think a little bit differently and maybe get involved in some activities.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, at that point, certainly knew I wasn't going to the NHL, which, you know, was certainly my dream my whole life, right? And what I was kind of aspiring for and playing hockey, you know, my entire life, and that always being my kind of top priority. You know, those things start to settle in, and, you know, you want to have the college experience, right? And like you said, you're certainly devoting a lot of time to the gym and on the ice. And, you know, one thing I loved actually about, you know, being a D1 athlete, or at least our setup, is we had open ice, you know, the hour before practice, and we practiced for 2 hours, then we had the ice an hour after. And there was legitimate, you know, lots of times I was out there at least 3 hours, usually closer to 4 hours a day.
Wow.
Which, you know, coach loved, because it gave the shooters, you know, an opportunity to shoot on a goalie if they want to put in some extra time. You know, so there was some great aspects to that, but, you know, definitely, let's just say there wouldn't have been too hard to smell some alcohol on me a few times on those Friday morning pre-game skates and things like that.
Yeah. So, you know, like you said, then there's the transition, right? So you come out of Quinnipiac and you're thinking about what, where are you going? What are you doing?
Yeah. So, you know, it's very difficult, I think, especially when you've been competitive your entire life and you're so used to that structure of, yes, I got practice, you know, whether it's every day or, you know, a couple times a week. And that's really what drives you to be, you know, motivated to do what you want to do. And when that, you know, sure, there's your career and, you know, trying to make a lot of money, you know, whatever your, you know, post season goals are, per career, I should say, goals are, but, you know, I certainly was very lost at that point. You know, I was kind of, again, really thinking about, like, it was official now, you know, I wasn't going to the NHL, you know, I wasn't, where really I dreamed I would be at that point. Right. So, you know, being around, especially in a small town that I grew up in, going back home, I did have surgery on my shoulder right after school, and kind of, just fell back into took advantage, I guess, of the opportunity that a lot of people around me just rely a lot on drugs and alcohol. And, you know, I fell into that pretty quickly and was stuck there for a few years, really.
Yeah. So that happens to you. Like you said, many athletes have this kind of happen because they're a little bit lost, as we said. Now, the question is, what did you do to try and rectify this situation?
Well, so I like to say my endurance career started actually about 3 a.m. on a Saturday night. So quite intoxicated, among other things. And I was actually down at my brother's house with some of my buddies as well. And I said, I'm going to run the Boston Marathon this year, guys. You know, so... So everybody laughed at me and said, yeah, sure, Colin, sure you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, I started looking into what the training would entail. I mean, I already kind of thought about it a little bit, and, you know, being from Massachusetts, right. You know, the Boston Marathon is obviously something we're all very aware of and think about, you know, or I certainly did growing up, you know, someday maybe. So, so I dove in. I mean, I still was partying on the weekends, you know, or I'd do my long run on a Saturday or something, and then I'd still party that night, you know, and wasn't perfect in a full, you know, complete 180 right off the get-go. But, you know, I really started to find joy again and pleasure and focus, because I had, you know, a new goal to shoot for, right? and it was physical, right? You know, so I was, you know, and even I guess I should take one step back. I mean, I was going to the gym a couple of times a week, you know, trying to improve my bench press, you know, and stuff like that, you know, and doing those kind of things. But at the end of the day, I really wasn't getting much satisfaction out of that. And it was kind of more just like almost an obligation or something that, you know, just didn't really have too much purpose to me. So when I found running, you know, that really helped me turn the corner. You know, it was a slow roll for sure. But so I think that was in December of 2018. I'm sorry, 2008, not 18, 2008, that I started training, and I did run the Boston Marathon in 2009. So
you know, accomplished that goal. I did.
That's, yeah. That's so, you know, wanted to run under 4 hours, and I did achieve that. So it was a great experience. And really just prior to that, probably a month or two, I kind of was already kind of looking at what the next thing mm-hmm. might be, you know, and, you know, seeing people doing triathlons, and actually had a teacher at school that did an Ironman. And so like, we kind of saw his progression during school, and, you know, it's like, oh, you know, that seems pretty neat. And so I set my sights on a half Ironman later that year. And that's really when I found my stride, and I said, wow, this is awesome. Like, this is what I really enjoy. You know, the diversity in training is right. You're not just running every day. You're swimming, you're biking, you're running, you know, you can, I can go all kinds of tangents with the benefits of triathlon or multi-sport, we call it, versus, you know, a single sport. But, yeah, I really just, you know, with the only other thing certainly with mentioning is I did also find my wife or meet my wife kind of during that time that I was training for the marathon. And she's a very good girl, you know, did not have the same habits that I did. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't willing to put up with those habits. So that certainly motivated me. And I mean, it was really for years, you know, like I'd go on benders and, you know, wake up the next day and I was like, all right, you know, that was the last time. And, you know, really my life, you know, I was working for a tech company, and, you know, I'd party really hard Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night. And then, you know, Sunday you'd sleep all day. And then like, you know, you go to work, you'd just go to bed early, and like, you'd basically get yourself back to feeling normal. And then you do it all over again. And it was just, you know, I went through that for years, you know, and always kind of saying, you know, I know I can do better than this. And, you know, this isn't what I want to be. And, you know, remember even having conversations with some of my brothers a few years older than me, like his friends, saying, you know, I was saying, I'm not going to do this forever. And they're like, yeah, you will, you know, whatever. And it was really kind of motivating to me to say, all right, you know, I'm really not going to be one yeah. of those people, you know, so. But really having that purpose, and, you know, for me with triathlon and certainly with running and a lot of these different sports, you know, I'd say they are mainstream now, but not quite as mainstream as the four major sports, you know, that gives you the opportunity to, you know, you're competing against other people in your age group, right? So they have 5 to 10 year increments that, you're racing against. So, you know, you can be competitive for the rest of your life if you want to be.
I thought that was an interesting point that you made, and we'll get into the triathlon situation, because you're right, that's a great way that, you know, you can always have the sport, right? So it's not like when you felt that feeling of, okay, my career is over, you hopefully won't have that feeling again, because this goes for a long time, doesn't it? Aren't there like up to probably, you know, older, what's the highest age that there is?
So there's I believe a couple of years ago, there was a 81 or 82 year old that finished Ironman World Championships.
Wow.
So it's, yeah.
We'll see. Here's to you, Colin. Yeah. But,
you know, and to me, you know, it is a lifestyle, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's about, you know, sure, I am competitive, and, you know, I'm going out there to win, you know, every time that I'm racing, but It is about living this lifestyle and being healthy. And, you know, it's completely changed my life.
Yeah, that's awesome. Love hearing that story. Now, that's not the only thing you do, as indicated by your titles. You're also now a triathlon coach. Tell me how that works and what you do in that role.
Yeah, so I have a triathlon coaching business called Peak Triathlon Coaching. And basically what it is, it's building training for you know, an athlete is, they prepare for a race or some kind of endurance event. So, you know, most of my clients are either doing half Ironmans or Ironmans. And so, it's not really like a personal trainer where like I'm getting together with them. Like I have clients throughout the country. You know, it's more about, saying, all right, you know, today's Monday, you're going to do a swim and, you know, a mobility workout, you know, tomorrow you're going to hit the bike and you're going to do some strength training, you know, and telling them to the T, you know, what, you want them to be doing in preparation for their race and, you know, understanding their strengths and weaknesses and, you know, and building a program that's going to put them, give them the best chance, you know, to do their best.
That's awesome. I love hearing that. And I feel like the popularity of triathlons and maybe people becoming triathletes has increased in popularity. I've got a few friends, Sarah Fuller, yourself, Abby Kristofich, Jared Shoemaker, by the way, was an Olympian. And I'm like, am I missing something here? Is there something I should know? Because it sounds like a lot of my friends are starting to get into it. Is it growing in popularity?
So it's interesting. It actually, according to some of the surveys and things, that it kind of peaked back in like the early tens there, you know, 2011, 12, and then it kind of went down a little bit. And then, you know, obviously COVID hit and, you know, we didn't have any races for a full year. That certainly affected my business, you know, pretty negatively. But since then it's gone up, and I feel like it is, at least in my community, is on the rise still, you know. I think it's a lot of things. I think my story is pretty similar, where a lot of people may start out with running and then it's like, all right, you know, they're looking to try something else. And then I have a lot of friends and clients that were very competitive runners, and you know, now they've really turned to multi-sport and triathlon. So but you know, to me, it's whatever, you know, makes you happy and keeps you content and inspired is what you should be doing. So, you know, whatever strain it is for you is all good with me.
Now I want to talk a little bit about the sponsorship side from an athlete branding perspective. Tell me about how these triathletes, especially who maybe struggle or might not be the best, are trying to get by, you know, financially, or what they're doing or how they're supporting themselves.
Well, yeah, hopefully we're really going to see an uptick in that. But right now, I mean, and I've coached a few of the lower end, you know, kind of professionals, the struggling triathletes, you know, that are just trying to make ends meet. And, you know, even the ones that I would say, there's still some guys that are top 10 in the world that really aren't making much money, when you would think, you know, that the top few guys definitely, you know, are doing pretty well, but even compared to certainly the four major sports, that's, you know, laughable really, you know, financially anyways, you know. And so, there is actually the PTO, the Professional Triathlon Organization, has been formed, about 3 years ago now. And, you know, I think there's definitely some upside to that. And I didn't realize how big that potentially is. They actually compared it to like tennis way back in the day. I was actually at a meeting where they were formally announcing the PTO, and, you know, they compared it to tennis, where it really wasn't going very well, you know, and people weren't making much money, and, you know, it was on kind of the fritz of heading out. And they formed an organization, you know, a players organization, and it started booming from there. So hopefully we'll see a similar trajectory in triathlon. But yeah, I mean, a lot of the lower end pros, they're either working at least part-time, if not full-time jobs, you know, a lot of them will do some coaching on the side, you know, and then they're expected to be, I mean, most of these professionals train almost as many hours as people do working during the week.
That's what I'm saying. You got to squeeze it all in.
Yeah. It's a legitimate, you know, you're just, instead of sitting on your butt here, like we are, you know, they're training away. So, but you know, to me and to my story, I guess, you know, I have qualified a few times where I could have taken my pro card and I decided not to. And one of those reasons is, you know, I had two or three kids at that point, and, you know, I was making reasonable money in the cybersecurity world, and there's just way more upside for me, you know, and providing for my family through the tech world than there is through racing triathlon and probably getting my butt kicked, to be perfectly honest. So I made that, you know, that decision, but, you know, I love, you know, still trying to be competitive. And I certainly still, compare may not be the fair word, but certainly look at what times the pros are doing, and, you know, and I try to get as close as I can to that, you know, and find a lot of inspiration, from them. And, you know, as an age grouper though, that's, you know, something I love. You know, yes, I have a lot going on in my life, and, you know, figuring out how to get everything in every day is a real joy that, you know, I get the battle every day, which, is good. And, you know, something that's been really helpful for me.
Absolutely. I wanted to talk about also the other side of things, and the fact that you obviously have a fitness center, and I want to hear more about this because I know you really help athletes, especially with recovery.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, I'm always looking for the latest and greatest kind of things to help myself and my clients to recover and, you know, perform at their best. So, especially prior to COVID, my tech job would have me traveling a decent amount. So I'd be hitting up, you know, major cities and going around, primarily staying on the eastern half of the US, but, certainly traveling around and, you know, getting the opportunity to see, and, you know, some of these things maybe I saw on TV or, you know, saw some of the pros doing, like cryotherapy, for example, if you're familiar, which is leveraging, very cold temperatures to help reduce inflammation and speed up recovery. So I was able to start testing some of these things out, and I've always kind of had the entrepreneurial mindset and kind of led me to saying, well, there's nothing around, you know, in the Southern New Hampshire area. But, you know, things like float therapy in a sensory deprivation tank. So it's like it's a pod or a pool of water that has about typically about 10 inches of water in it, and then has over 1,000 pounds of Epsom salt in it. So what you do is you go and you just lay in there for an hour. Typically, some of them do different durations, but both physically and mentally extremely beneficial. That's probably my favorite one of the recovery things that we have these days. But we also have some light therapy, infrared sauna, compression therapy. Most people may be familiar with Normatec or Hyperice now, and some of the things that they offer. So definitely the active person's, you know, wonderland when it comes to recovery.
That sounds amazing. Sounds like a playground for adults that have chronic pain.
Yeah, seriously, right? You know, yeah, we don't know anybody in the world that has that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Wow, that's fantastic. Now, where is that located, Colin, so people know?
So that's in Manchester, New Hampshire. Yeah. Okay.
Excellent. All right. Back to my old Pirates days with the Verizon Arena there in Manchester.
Oh, yeah. A little less than 10 minutes from there.
Oh, okay. Very nice. Yeah. I spent a lot of time. Actually, that was the location. I had two things in my AHL career. You're a hockey guy, so I'm going to share these two things with you. One, they did a fireworks display, and they did the indoor fireworks, and one of the pieces of the fireworks caught one of their championship banners. Oh. And the thing started like going on fire, and they had to put out the fire. They had somebody up in the rafters putting the thing out. I couldn't believe that one. And the other funny story in Manchester was that we were there, and I'm trying to remember the mascots. Oh, it's Max, the mascot of the Monarchs at the time.
Okay, yeah.
He came out on the ice. I think it was one of the early games in the season, and he took a digger. So he falls, and his head comes off. You can imagine what how these kids are looking at him like, oh my goodness, what happened to the poor mascot? So those are my two Manchester moments. Yeah, those are good ones.
Yeah,
those are good ones. So but you know, it talks about where we go in our career, obviously, you know, from what I did there with the Pirates and accomplishing, you know, my dream to broadcast professionally, and you know, now working with athletes and athlete branding. This is really a great fit for me. So let's talk about your podcast, because you've got a nice little bit of athlete brand you're building yourself as well.
Working on it. Yeah. Maybe need a little help from somebody, but, you know, definitely, you know, something I enjoy. And so one of my assistant coaches and I have a podcast called Age Grouper for Life. So in triathlon, you know, as a non-professional, you're kind of referred to as an age grouper. And so Age Grouper for Life is just basically that, you know, you're committed kind of to the lifestyle and, you know, have no, I shouldn't say no aspirations for professional, but, you know, you're living kind of that lifestyle where you typically have a full-time job and you're managing, you know, training along with, you know, family, you know, job and all the other fun things that we deal with in our daily. So, which was funny. I did play a joke or my the first time we had the podcast going when I first qualified to race professional, and so my coworker, my co podcaster asked me if you know I was going to take my pro card, and I said, "No way, man! I'm an age grouper for life," you know, and had to, you know, represent. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a but, great name. No,
you know, so we have, you know, we'll talk to, we'll interview different athletes, you know, when people from around the world that we find to be inspiring, you know, and only age groupers, right? So we don't have professionals on the show. And then we'll certainly pick up different topics where he and I will just talk about things triathlon related.
Very nice. I like that. And of course, Augusta, Maine will host an Ironman triathlon event in July. I'm really excited about it. And tell me about these kind of events. This is great for other triathletes, you say, that come from around the world.
They do. Yeah, we're super excited. You know, so to have, we had heard rumor that Maine 70.3 was actually in Old Orchard Beach the last few years. And we heard it was getting pulled from there and they weren't going to be doing it. And actually, in New England, there used to be a couple in New Hampshire. There used to be one in Providence. There was one in Connecticut. And they kept kind of trickling off and actually discontinuing these races, unfortunately. So for Ironman branded races, we were really down to Maine for a couple of years when it was in Old Orchard Beach. And then they did just bring back Timberman in Laconia, New Hampshire, this past year, but you know, really that and Maine were the only events we had, so we were losing that. We were pretty bummed, and we're very, very happy it's picked up in Augusta here. So we're looking forward to your hospitality here.
Oh, absolutely. We're looking forward to having you here in vacation land. So yeah. That'll be good. Let's last but not least, you are extremely busy. You're obviously a very good dad. You're a great husband. Let's talk about your personal life. Talk to me about the one thing you love most about being a dad.
Just being, I mean, for me, I would say I enjoy my kids more and more every day as they get older and we get to do more things together, you know, coaching my oldest son's flag football team these days, you know, that's a ton of fun. And, you know, we do go swimming every week together and, you know, just being active with them, going out for hikes and different things. But, you know, anything I can do to help them hopefully be the best that they can be. And, but it's a tough job, but, it's a lot of fun and, really enjoy it.
Yeah. I can appreciate that. I think that I've found that as well, is sharing your passions with your kids, can really bring out the best in you and the best in them, because they actually really start to enjoy it. I don't know if you know, but Kelsey, my daughter, loves broadcast. She's like she's a junior broadcaster at this point. She's got her own YouTube channel. We did a podcast episode. We evaluated all 32 NFL logos. We had a blast. I mean, when you get a 10-year-old talking about like these logos and the whiskers for the Panthers and everything else, I mean, it's a hilarious episode, but it's so true. So like, you don't get a better perspective than a 10-year-old who's ready to just tell you anything. Like they're not going to hold back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, no, totally.
And
you reminded me too, for my kids. So actually my youngest still isn't quite old enough, but they do a youth triathlon in Bedford, New Hampshire. And, I was able to get all three of my boys to do that race. And my oldest started doing it at 5 and like, you know, I was almost, you know, fighting back the tears as he was out there doing it. And, he did some funny things. And then my second child is autistic and, you know, he's, semi high function, you know, but, I was able to get him and we did the race together this year. And, it was a very special day, you know, to see all three of them out there doing it. And especially for Eli, my second one, to get through. It wasn't easy, but we did it.
Oh, that is a really cool story, Colin. And I think that's a great note to end on. And I want to, again, thank you for making the time, because I know you're a busy guy. And I'm looking forward to to build in on what we've started here, because I think there's a lot of ways that we're going to be able to help not only each other, but I think a lot of people who listen to this are going to be inspired, and hopefully they learn something new. They contact you, certainly, if they are a triathlete or thinking about anything in their career that you can certainly help them with. I got to get to Manchester. That's what I know. I got to do that. So we'll find a way to make that happen. But I want to say again, thanks again for coming on the podcast and keep up the great work. Okay.
Thanks so much, Greg. You know, it's you'll always be the voice of Quinnipiac, the Bobcats, you know, in hockey in my mind. So to hear your voice the last few weeks here has been pretty awesome.
No, I appreciate that, Colin. And there, for those of you tuning in, I'm Greg Glenn. Glad you could tune in, and stay pliable, my friends.
Thanks for listening to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes from today's episode and catch up on recent episodes at pliablemarketing.com. We also encourage you to share topics and guest ideas by emailing our production staff at pliablemarketing@gmail.com. We love hearing from our loyal listeners and athletes who want to grow their brand. So jump in and be part of the podcast, because that's how we roll.